For Parshas Miketz, we're going to begin with a pasuk that you see at the top of your page, which is in Bereishis Perek Mem Aleph, pasuk Nun Aleph. And this pasuk tells us that Yosef was in Mitzrayim, and he got married and he had two sons, and he called them by names. The name that he chose for his older son was of course Menashe, and for his younger son Ephraim. What are the meanings of these names respectively? So the Torah spells it out for us. Menashe, ki nishani Elohim eskol amoli veskol beis avi. There's a difficult word here, I mean in Lashon Kodesh. How would you translate ki nishani Elohim? This is what's called in the Hebrew grammar the causative. Hashem Elohim has caused me, nishani. What is nishani? To forget. Hashem has made me forget all of my sweat and toil when I was back in the home of my father, of Yaakov. And then the second name he calls Ephraim, ki hefrani Elohim bi eretz anyi. That even though I'm in this land of affliction, where Yosef suffers so much, nevertheless, Hafrani Hashem made miracles for me that I could rise to a position of honor and dignity and so forth. Well, David, you want to join us? There's a.
I think we're going to need one more chair.
Okay, so we'll need one more chair. But this is a handout. Is there one more handout there?
Yes,
I see. You'll hold on to it, all right, Jeremy? You'll be. And also, Jeremy, you'll.
Okay,
you're my man because the doctor gave me this clock, but it just doesn't work for me. I don't know. So I understand very well why Yosef calls his younger son Ephraim, because a name indicates an expression of thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we name someone, a child that's born to us, and imagine the situation of Yosef in Mitzrayim, and despite it all, he goes from Shiflus and Avdus all the way up to the top of the echelon. So Hifrani Elokim Beretzanyi, that certainly is a glorious expression of thanks and gratitude to Hashem, which defines the essence of the name Ephraim. But in the case of Menashe, we find this very, very difficult. Why? Because here, Yosef is kaviyochol thanking Hashem for having forgotten, that he caused him to forget all that went on in Beis Avi, in the father of Yaakov. Let's take a half a minute to think about the father of Yaakov. Yaakov is called in Chazal as the Dmus Merkava Bibnei Adam. You know, of all human beings, Yaakov is the only one who's chosen to be the Dmus, the image of the Merkav itself. Yaakov teaches Yosef in Mitzrayim, in Eretz Canaan, all the Torah that he has. Whatever he learned in the Beis Medrash of Shem V'Ever, he transmits to Yosef. Rashi points out on the Pasuk Ben Zkunim that it's not just that, we need one more chair, and we have a page for you. Not just that that Yosef is the eldest, you know, the youngest son, meaning the son of his elder father, you know, the Ben Zkunim, as we call it. Rashi says more than that. He quotes Unkelus that he was the Ben of Zikna. Zikna means Chachma. Yosef had sat at the feet of his father, soaking up all of his Torah. The Ramban adds, if you remember, we discussed it last week, that Yaakov Avinu transmitted to Yosef not just the Torah and the mitzvahs, but also the secrets of the Torah. So why would Yosef make a statement thanking Hashem for forgetting all that he had worked and toiled in the house of his father Jacob? Now, keep in mind the word Amel, as called Amoli. You know, you and I sometimes think that Amel, Amelus, is a negative term. It's pejorative. You know, I sweat and I toil. Like, for example, if you would think of all the work that Yaakov underwent during the 14 years he was working for Rachel and Leah and Beis Laban, that's a negative, pejorative kind of Amelus. But the word Amel itself is not negative. Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, Adam li amel yulad. Man was created for the purpose of amelus. We're here to work. There's some people like to take it easy. You see it very often in children, especially if they undergo a change in school or in country. And they, you know, in the old country, it was easy for them. They knew the language well. And children are not willing to make that transition to buckle down and do work. But Adam li amel yulad. And that's exactly what Yosef did. How many years did Yosef experience this receiving the Torah that was transmitted to him by his father? Anybody know the secret number? Don't answer it once, because I can't. It's hard for me to hear too many voices at the same time. How many years was Yosef, from the time he was born until he was sold down to Mitzrayim, how many years was he sitting at the feet of his father soaking in all the Torah?
17,
that's the magic number.
He was 17 years old.
17 years old, that's it. Yeah. 17 years old. And Yaakov Avinu was able to transmit to Yosef, during that period of 17 years, all the Torah that he received from Shem V'Aver. So why is Yosef standing up and saying, thank you Hashem that you have made me forget all the amil, all the work and the toil, the base of you when I existed in the Ol of Yaakov, which is called the Ol of the Shekhinah itself?
But Rabbi, maybe the amil, he doesn't mean the actual learning with his father. Maybe he means the toiling in terms of living with his brothers, etc. Maybe.
Perhaps, but again, El base avi, you know, base avi is a concept in the Torah. Yeah. But Jeremy, I hear what you're saying, and I would like to present to you the approach of the Sam Derech. I had a few copies here on the table. I don't know. I'm sorry I didn't make enough copies because it didn't come out too well, but maybe you could look on if you'd like. And I just want to present to you his approach to this very strange name, Menashe. He begins his discussion, which is the second source on the handout that I gave you, with a statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in Shabbos in the famous sugya of Matan Torah. You know, all the agadotas about Matan Torah, what went on when the Torah was given, are recorded in Shabbos Peches. You should always remember that, because if you ever have to give a drasha for Shavuos, that's the place to go. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi describes what happened after every single dibur of the giving of the Torah. How many dibros were there? What's the magic number?
Ten.
There were 10 dibros. Well, what happened after each dibra? Each one of the statements, the declarations of Hashem, was so overwhelming that the world filled up. Take a look at the language here. He says, based on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ma'idich Siv Lachyo Ka'arugas HaBosem. You've heard of the phrase Arugas HaBosem? Does anybody know what the word Bosem means? Besamim, bosem, fragrant smelling perfume spices. Kol dibur v'dibur shiyotza v'yikiyat HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After every single declaration of Hashem, every time Hashem enunciated one of the Aseret HaDibros, nismali kol ha'olam kulo. What's the next word? Besamim. Don't read it b'shamayim, because then you'll get off on the wrong track here. Besamim means this overwhelmingly powerful smell. Now we're going to have to try to figure out why the result of each dibra was a perfumed smell. Last week, if you remember, we spoke about the perfumed smell that accompanied Yosef when he was sold out to Mitzrayim. But this is the smell that went up like a poof right after each one of the dibras. You know, Walt Disney would have a wonderful job here, maybe with other companies, you know, to just picture what went on after everything dibros. You can just see, like, you know, the fragrant, you know, perfume going all over the place. But Kevan Shemi Dibur Rishon Nismali. Now, what happens if the world is completely saturated with this perfumed smell following the first dibra? Now, each dibra of Hashem, of the 10 dibros, has to produce a certain aroma, this beautiful fragrance, but the world is already filled up after the first dibra. Do you follow the technical? There's a logistical problem over here. Comes along Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he says that Kevan should be dibra rishon nismali dibra sheni lehechan holach. Hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu haruach me'atzros me'otzrosov. God, as it were, takes out a strong wind from his treasures up in Shamayim, v'yamavir, and he would blow away the smell, rishon, meaning one after the other. Shenemar sifsosav shoshanim notfos mo. Rabosai, what does this mean? On a deeper level, it means that if you're completely dedicated to a dibra, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the people of Israel were attached to it. They clung to it, you know, what we call dveikus. But that's great. There's only one problem. If you become totally dedicated to the first dibra, what do you lose out? What's going to be your problem now? Going on to the second dibra. There's no room in the world for Hashem to generate the second dibra with its own unique aroma. Not the aroma here on Rechov Emek Rufayim. So what does Hashem have to do? He's got to say, Bnei Yisrael, absorb this smell. Now take a deep breath. We're going to blow away this beautiful psalm, and now we're going to replace it with the second dibra. And this goes on and on 10 times over. So the fascinating idea here, and I want to read to you part of the words of the Sam Derech. He writes, and this is towards the bottom of your right column. He says, "Be'ez kabolas haTorah, hutzrach haKadosh Baruch Hu lefazer." Lefazer means to dissipate. Bechol dibro dech sanichoach habesomim shenismali bo haolam. He had to cause that the smell to dissipate after each dibra. And now the question is, why smell? What's unique about smell, this aroma?
This is the strongest memory you have of something. That's all your senses.
Excellent. And why? Why is the smell so powerful? You know, they say about Pavlov, you know, in his experiment with the dog, you know, the smell. It's the smell that brings it back to you. Because the Gemara tells us in Brachas, I don't know if you're up to Mem Gimel Amid Beis in Brachas. Did you get that far? Ezu Dover Shanashama Nehenes, but we have five senses. But only one of the five is a pleasure that is enjoyed directly by the soul of a person. It's not just physical. The Ena Guf Nehmen, it's not just physical. Hevi Omer Zahareach. And that's why the Pasuk says, Kol HaNeshama T'chal Ka, that when there's a Reach Tov, like for example, Motzi Shabbos, we smell some psalmim, it somehow uplifts and inspires the nefesh of a person. So the Reach of each one of the Dibros was a reflection of this inspiration that was unique and characteristic of that Dibra. And now at this point, Hashem has to dissipate that, because if you're so involved, you know, and dovek in that Reach Nichok, you won't have room to go on to the next Dibra. Their neshamas were enjoying the pleasure of the arvus v'harevna. We say it every day in the Birchas HaTorah. Harevna means the sweetness, mufla v'adira, powerful and sensational. Ad kalos hanefesh, it was so overwhelming, and therefore there's no longer room in the neshama to move on to the second dibra. Hashem had to cause a ruach to dissipate the smell and bring a second dibra. And now take a look at the Gemara in Bava Metzia, because we're going to see the same sort of phenomenon, that when you finish a certain spiritual experience, you've got to take a pause, put it on the back burners for a second, allow it to dissipate in order that you could move on and make the transition to the next spiritual high or experience. And the Gemara tells us about Rab Zera, that he lived in Bavel, and that's where he absorbed the Torah of Bavel. But now, he made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. You hear this, fellas? He made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, the great Rab Zera. And what did he do when he got to the land of Israel? Exactly what every one of us did. Yosef Me'ata Nisa. He fasted 100 fast days. Didn't we all do that? And why was he fasting when he got to Eretz Yisrael? He should have been thrilled. That he would forget the Torah that he studied in Bavel. How Yitachin, could it be possible? Reb Zera, one of the great Amoraim, studied Torah. He soaked up all the Torah of the great leaders of Bavel. His Rebbeim were amongst the greatest Amoraim. And he fasted 100 fast days in order to forget his Torah? How could it be?
I need 100 fast days for that.
You could do it in one day. Ki hefi, you talking about the check or ki hefi delo nitridem, so that he wouldn't be tarud. Do you remember that word tarud? Tarud means when you're preoccupied, when you're obsessed with something, and you can't think clearly. Like the Gemara says that maybe we should exempt you from Kriyat Shema if your yacht sinks down to the bottom with all the schar, you know, everything that you have on it, because you're tarud. And the Gemara says, no, he has to overcome that tirda. But let's say he's tarud because he lost one of his close relatives. He's called an onen. Because of that tirda, he's potter from all the mitzvahs. Or, for example, a chassan, when he gets married, before he consummates his marriage, he's potter from all mitzvahs. That's called tirda. Tirda is something that you're so focused on, you're so obsessed with, that you can't shift your mind. There's not enough room in your mind to move on to something else. Says Rashi, "Delo nitride kisha ala le'eretz Yisrael lumod mipirav Yochanan v'amoroim she'eretz Yisrael." The greatest amora at the time in the land of Israel and Palestine then was Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is the first generation. He was actually responsible for the Talmud Yerushalmi, Rabbi Yochanan. And the Torah of Eretz Yisrael was unique, says Rashi. Hamoraim shever tzol lo hayu b'nei machlokes. It was so different in Eretz Yisrael than it was in Bavel. In Bavel, the Gemara describes it in many places that the students used to fight with each other. You know, one would say this, and the other guy would pick up a shtender and throw it at him and say, "You don't know what you're talking about." Again, it was all part of the Melchamta Shel Torah. In Eretz Yisrael, it was different. The Hamoraim worked together in unison to work out a sugya. And he says, Miyashvin es tamin below kushos et pirukim. The Torah of Eretz Yisrael was radically different. It wasn't full of glitches and questions and issues, arguments and counter arguments. It was straightforward. It was simple. It was profound. We should never make this mistake. And I'm talking to myself now. Sometimes we assume that if you have a pilpul, you know, back and forth, a dialectic, a hamamina maskona, an argument, a counter argument, then, you know, that's the real Torah. The most profound Torah is the simplest Torah. That's straightforward. That's glatt, as we say. Smooth. It's pshat. That was the difference between Torah's chutzlars and Torah's Eretz Yisrael. Says the Sam Derech, if you're looking here on the other page that you have, Kuf Chaf Aleph in the second paragraph, he says, Kidei leklot v'lesfog heteva Torah's Eretz Yisrael. Rav Zera's mind and soul was totally focused and obsessed with the methodology of chutzlars, of Bavel. But now he came to Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to sit at the feet of Rabbi Yochanan and soak up the Torah and the methodology of Torah of Rabbi Yochanan. Yodar Abzera Sha'olav Lispalel Ulevakesh, he had to pray to Hashem and petition with deep supplications and fast days. Lishkach et Torah's Bavel. What does it mean, Lishkach et Torah's Bavel? To forget the Torah that he learned at Bavel? No. Chas v'sholom. Ena kavana lishkach mamish, not to forget everything. But rather that he shouldn't be overwhelmed by that methodology, that approach to learning Torah, and he should take a fresh start. Kashel lav hitraglut l'matzavim chadashim. Man by nature finds it very difficult, once he's gotten used to a certain pattern, a way of thinking, to shift. And I remember when I went from high school to college, it was very difficult for me. Because in high school they spoon-fed you, and they pushed in more and more information. Everything was read on a very superficial level. Then we got to college, and then I remember graduate school, we had seminars. And it was a whole different methodology. It was kind of an in-depth approach. Same thing happened to me when I got to Rabbi Soloveitchik's class. I remember. It was like I had to forget everything, because it was a whole new way of looking at things. A whole profound way. He says, "Lamod b'tzurah shonah, to change in entirety your way of thinking, your methodology. Bimenu hurgo bozman tamin. You were so used to it. Now let's take the case of Yaakov of Yosef atzad. Yosef is undergoing a major transition, a major change. Yes, he had soaked up the Torah of his father, but that was a different kind of Torah. Now he was faced with new challenges. Now he was thrown into a prison, into a dungeon." And then from there, he would rise to be the viceroy of the greatest country of the civilized world, of Mitzrayim. He needed to learn a new Torah. It was a Torah of Chutz Laaretz, just the opposite of Rav Zera, who was forgetting his Torah of Chutz Laaretz in order to learn Torah of Eretz Yisrael. In the case of Yosef, it's the exact opposite. He has to forget for the time. Not to forget, please don't misunderstand. He didn't want to forget the Torah that he learned from Yaakov, but he wanted to take a fresh start so that he could somehow face all the challenges of applying the Torah to a whole new set of circumstances, a whole new environment, a whole new society. And that's why you may remember that Yehuda was sent to Mitzrayim to set up a Beis Ulpana. Rashi says the name of Chazal. He had to set up a yeshiva. This is going to be the yeshiva that would teach the Torah of Chutz Laaretz, that would teach us how to strengthen ourselves and fortify ourselves spiritually so that we can face all the challenges of Chutz Laaretz. And therefore, Yosef had thanked Hashem. Thanked Hashem, that's the name Menashe, that you've caused me to forget. You've caused me to take a fresh start. Now I can approach the Torah and make sure that it is commensurate, it's appropriate, it fits with the Torah that I need, both as an individual and as the leader of Mitzrayim. Now I'll ask you, Rav Osai, another question. Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim to be with his son Yosef. And once again, just like in the first period of his life, meaning in Yosef's youth, Yaakov, his father, played the role of his mentor, of his teacher, to fortify him with Torah. Now once again, Yaakov is called upon as the father of Yosef in Mitzrayim to play the role of the teacher, of the mentor, of the guide to his son Yosef, but an entirely new set of circumstances. Yosef is now the shalit on Mitzrayim. He's the sovereign ruler of Mitzrayim. He needed decisions that had to be made. There were major moral issues that Yosef had to face as viceroy. You remember, we're going to get it next week, in next week's parasha, moving people around and who would get the food and, you know, triage and all these different... Who did he have as a Rebbe to teach him the second round of Torah, the Torah of the viceroy of Mitzrayim? He needed his father Yosef. And Rabbosai, how long did Yaakov play that role as the mentor of his son in Mitzrayim? Who remembers the secret number?
17 again.
Exactly 17 again. There's the first 17 years of Yosef's life in which Yaakov plays the role as the mentor, the teacher of this young boy, to just pump him with Torah, with spiritual prowess, with the strength to face the challenges of an Ashes Potiphar and all the other challenges. And now, there's another period of time in Yosef's life. Here, Yosef has risen to the highest, most powerful position in the entire globe. And now he has to face new challenges, new ethical decisions. Again, he needs a Rebbe. And once again, he's going to soak up the Torah of his father for another 17 years. The last 17 years, paralleling the first 17 years. Vayar Yaakov, this is the fourth source on your page, Ki Yesh Shever B'Mitzrayim. We're beginning now Perek Mem Beis. Vayomer Yaakov Lebonov Lama Tisro. What does it mean, Lama Tisro? Meaning, we heard that there's food down in Mitzrayim. We're at the point of starvation here in Eretz Canaan. Why are you dilly-dallying? Why are you taking your time and postponing? We've got to get down to Mitzrayim. The Ramban, in his Perish Al HaTorah, adds another perspective to this entire discussion. Says the Ramban, V'ulai hoyu b'nei Yishmol b'nei Esav boim me'eretz achuzasam el Yosef lishbar. The word was getting out, Rashi also points this out, that why are the B'nai Yaakov lingering in Eretz Canaan? After all, it's a very strong famine for so many years. It must be that they have a storage of food, a storehouse full of food. And Rashi says that the people of Mitzrayim, the Ramban embellishes Rashi over here. When the people came down to Mitzrayim from all over the globe, and they traveled through Eretz Canaan, they would pass by the area that was inhabited by the B'nai Yaakov. And the Ramban says, "Hoyu boim Derech Eretz Kenan V'Ovrim Olav. They would pass by Yaakov Avinu. And amongst them were the Bnei Yishmael, the Bnei Esav. Amar Lehem. So Yaakov turns to his sons and he warns them. And he says, Lo Yiro Atzmem Suveim Bifneihem. Don't show yourself as if you are satiated, as if you have a full belly of food. Ki achshedu sheyesh liYaakov tefuah. They'll derive the conclusion that Yaakov has a great deal of food, a surplus of food. V'yavo elav lechol imo lechem v'beisa. They're going to come to eat by you. In America, we have this phrase, you know, that he'll eat me out of house. What?
House and home.
House and home. Meaning, you know, sometimes it's good to have achnos zorachim, but sometimes they come in, you know, and they come with the whole family and all the, and you know, especially the teenagers, they pounce upon and they want the ice cubes and everything else. Here, Bnei Yishmael and Bnei Esav are traveling on their way, journeying to Eretz Mitzrayim to get food. They're going to stop by Bnei Yaakov. See, look, these guys look very healthy and robust. You know what I mean? They got full bellies. Some of them even have beer bellies. What's going on here? Let's pack ourselves into the Bnei Yaakov and eat them out of house and home. But the Som Derech, which I gave you on the second page, says something totally different. He says that there's a much deeper meaning in what the Ramban wants to tell us. And he asks the following question. Yaakov Avinu, when he raised his family, what was the most important doctrine, the central theme of his education, of his educational program? To be meticulous about the observance of the mitzvahs. To make sure that the Bnei Yaakov, even as small as they were in number relative to other nations, that they would be able to preserve their tradition. And he writes, Yaakov inu nog l'chol orach yimei yomiv b'derech shal hakpada. Hakpada means demanding. He was very demanding when it came to the chinuch of Bnei Boso. Shmirasam mipnei hashpah shal gorim shliv. Why was Yaakov inu so afraid? The answer is because if the other nations of the world would come close, they would have such an impact. They would lower the spiritual level of Bnei Yaakov. And that's what he was worried about. And therefore, since Yaakov was afraid that these nations would enter into the society of Bnei Yaakov and have a hashpah roh, have a negative influence, he wanted to make sure that these nations would stay at a distance. Now go back to the Ramban again. The Ramban says, V'yavo elav, if they found out that the food is there to be gotten in the Bnei Yaakov, lechol imo lechem v'beiso. Imo doesn't mean, you know, that there'll be a separate room for the guests. You know, you have a guest room. No. Imo means they're going to sit down at the table with Bnei Yaakov, chummy, put their arms around them, eat with them, you know, pass the food, and they make light talk and everything else. Says the Ramban, this is why Yaakov Avinu wanted to avoid this. It wasn't that he was stingy and he wouldn't want to share his food and supplies with the Bnei Yaakov, the Bnei Yishmael. But rather, Ramban says that Yaakov was afraid that they would linger in the house, not 1 hour, but for days and days, before they would go down to Mitzrayim. The Yischabru, and now the brothers would have a chaverus. Yischabru is Lashon Chibur, a connection with these other nations, and that would have a negative influence. If you have a chumash, I think there are a couple of chumashim behind you, then perhaps you could open up to Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Yud Tes. Now what I want you to do is keep, if you have this big blue chumash on page 100, keep one finger on Pasuk Yud Tes, and then a finger on page 98, which is the previous page, and that's Pasuk Gimel. And let's see what happens here. In Pasuk Yud Tes, it says, V'hine sheva paros acheros, olos achrehem, okay? And it says, achrehem, dalos v'ra'os tar mi'od v'rakos basar lo'ra, isi kahena b'chol eretz mitzrayim lo'ra. Watch what's happening here, Rabotai. This is a direct quote from Paro. Paro tells over his dream to Yosef, asking Yosef to interpret his dream. And he says about the Paro's roes vidakos, these skinny, emaciated cows, Lo ra'isi kahena b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. I never saw such starved, you know, skinny looking cows in Eretz Mitzrayim until today. We never had it before. Wow. Mitzrayim is a land of plenty. We never saw this phenomenon. Why did I see it in my dream? Now take a look back at the beginning of this perek, which is on page 98, Pasuk Beis, and here the Torah describes the dream of Paro. It doesn't say it seems that Paro added something to the dream, what we call an editorial comment. And what was motivating Paro? You see, when the Torah at the beginning of this perek, at the beginning of Miketz, describes the dream of Paro, there's no additional editorial comments here. But Paro feels necessary. There's something, he's embarrassed about something. When a king has a dream about the situation in his land, in his empire, that dream could mean something that's indicative of the kind of empire that he's the king of. And if all he sees is Paro's Dakos, maybe he's reflecting on the history of the land of Mitzrayim, and he's putting it in a negative light, as if to say, you know, what do we get in this land? All we get is Paro's Dakos Veros Mara, the very skinny cows. You want to get the fat, healthy cows, you go to Switzerland. That's what you'll see. So what was the point? In the original dream, it didn't say this. Paro felt a little embarrassed in front of Yosef. Here's Yosef. Who is he? He's an Eved. He's a lowlife. They just took him out of jail and shaved him and brought him, ushered him in front of the king. And he's going to tell Paro, and he's going to tell Yosef that this is my imperial sovereign rulership. What I produce here is Paro's Ros and Dakos. So What does Paro decide? He wants to cover up the embarrassment. He says, "Lo ra'isi osa kohena b'chol eretz Mitzrayim." We never had such a thing. We're used to those fat cows, you know, with the bells around them, the beautiful, clean, you know, with the black and the white and all the colors and everything else. This is our land of plenty, but something's going on here. I've got this very strange dream. What is it telling me? Is it some prophetic message over here? And you know what? It's also possible, if I go one step further, we'll take a pause, that you know what's motivating Paro? Paro had, just like we have here in Israel today, what's called a Sar HaChaklaut. How would you translate that? The minister of agriculture, right? So the minister of agriculture probably did not want to admit to Paro that, you know, from time to time, not everything is so great. They probably took those Paro's Dakos and executed them immediately, so Paro would never find out about it. So the Sar HaKlud, from time to time, takes his king, Paro, by the hand and gives him a tour of the cow sheds. And sure enough, what does he see? He only sees these fat, beautiful cows. So it could be that Paro is telling the truth. He's not lying. Laura Isi Arhena. I never saw it until there. Doesn't mean that the land of Mitzrayim didn't have it. I don't know. Maybe the Sarah HaKlut was covering over the truth. But whatever it is, Rabbos, I want you to see the difference between the beginning of this perek and Pasuk Yutes. The beginning of the perek is the way the Torah describes the dream in reality, in truth, without any admixture, without any additions. But here in Pasuk Yutes, that's already a quote, a direct quote from the mouth of Paro. How did Paro describe his dream to Yosef? And surely he colored it with a little bit of, you know, of lining, Lorisi Kahena. We never had such a terrible situation. I want you to take a look at the next pasuk here in Bracious Membeis, and we're up to pasuk Gil. You remember that Yaakov begged his children to go down to Mitzrayim and to take food there so that we'll survive and we won't die. Vayerdu achei Yosef asara lishbar bar mimitzrayim. The Torah testifies that the brothers of Yosef went down to Mitzrayim. Now just let me take a break for a split second and ask you, why does the Torah say they went down to Mitzrayim? Why not up to Mitzrayim?
Exactly.
Eretz Yisrael is considered gavah mikol haaretzot. It's a high land. and they were going down. So that's the Torah's description. But take a look at the previous pasuk. Pasuk Beis, Vayomer, and Yaakov turns to his sons and he says, Hinei Shamati, Ki Yesh Shevra Mitzrayim, Redu Shama, go down there, Vishivru Lano Misham, Venichliya Velamamos. Says Rashi, Redu Shama. Now, keep in mind, if Rashi says something, and especially he's going to use the word remez, resh mem zayin, which means an illusion, obviously something's bothering Rashi. Rashi doesn't always tell us what his question is. He doesn't always flesh that out explicitly. But the fact that Rashi needs to look into this pasuk and see new interpretations that go way beyond the simple reading, straightforward pshat, it must mean that something's cooking over here. Rashi says that when Yaakov tells his son, instructing them, Redu Shama, go down there, Velo Amar Lechu. What does that mean, Velo Amar Lechu? Rashi is analyzing two words in Hebrew. One is redu and one is lechu. What does lechu mean? And what does redu mean?
One is go down, one is time to go.
To go. Lechu means get on your way. You know, straight away. And redu means go down. So Rashi says that Yaakov should have instructed his sons, lechu, go to Mitzrayim. Remez, but there's a deeper meaning here, and we don't know whether Yaakov was conscious about this or was even subconscious. Ramaz lemasayim v'eser shanim. This was a hint to the 210 years shenishtabdu b'mitzrayim. Communion redu. If you take the word redu and you calculate its gematria, resh is 200, dalet is 4, and Vav is 6, correct? So if you add 200 and 4 and 6 is 210. Redu means go down to Mitzrayim for 210 years, meaning Yaakov Avinu was conveying to them that this is the beginning of a new epoch in Jewish history, the beginning of Golus Mitzrayim. So the super commentary on Rashi, we've mentioned him in the past, is Rav Elio Mizrahi, the Ra'im. And he says, Lo Shamati Pirusho, I never heard such a pshat. Meaning, he's perplexed by it. Ki kol aholech me eretz Knan, li eretz Mitzrayim, yikare yored. Anyone who goes from the land of Knan to Eretz Mitzrayim is yored. Ume eretz Mitzrayim, l'eretz Knan, in the opposite direction, yikare ole, he's going up. Midesha Eretz Kanan Gvoa Michal Arotos. Eretz Kanan is the highest of all lands. In other words, what was Rashi's problem over here? Rashi says it should have said Lechu. What do you mean it should have said Lechu? Yaakov is using a very meticulous language and he says Redu. And that language, that choice of the word Redu, is totally appropriate. So why does Rashi have to build castles in the sky over here? That Redu is a gematria, now is the inception of a new period of diaspora, 210 years of Mitzrayim. Forget all that. What do you mean he should have said Lechu? If I tell you to go down to Mitzrayim, I tell you Redu. V'od, and furthermore, Vayerdu Achei Yosef. The very next pasuk says, in fact, that the Achei Yosef went down. Is Ma'ikul Neima? There it doesn't say Vayelchu, and then there's no symbolism about 210 years of Golus. The brothers were totally unaware of that. So the one who comes to the defense of Rashi is the Maral Miprag. He wrote a later commentary, much later after the Mizrahi. It's called the Gur Aryeh. And he writes the following. I ran out of a little space, so I wrote it a little bit in hand. Ki haya roy litfos lashon tov. What bothers Rashi is that when a person speaks, there are two types of speech. There's lashon tov. Lashon tov means a refined way of speaking. You know, like, for example, in America, young children are called kids. Is that true also in England?
Yeah.
That's not a refined way of speaking, at least not in America. Or people are called folks. In America, that's not a very nice way of talking about people. Folks, you know, folks like old folks, you know. There are certain words which can be translated, or there are synonyms for those words, but one word is much more refined than another word. Can you think of any examples? Like, for example, if you want to say something has a bad odor, you know, you could say it stinks. You know, that's not a nice word. I don't know, again, every country is different. South Africa might be different, in Australia and England and America, every country. But I know when I was brought up, if I use the word it stinks, my father would get very angry at me. And that's not the way to talk, you know. I can never say about my mother she or her. It always had to be mom. My father was very marked on that. So there's a certain way of speaking. Says the Maharal, if you have a choice between two words, redu, go down, or lechu, go, redu is not a refined language. Why? Ki redu mi lashon yirida. When you say about a person, go down, eino dibur tzach v'tov. That's not a refined way of speaking. Lashon Amora al Yerida. Yerida seems to be not just physically go down. You see, the beauty of Lashon Kodesh, and this is the only language I think that has this feature, is that words in Lashon Kodesh mean two things. They mean one thing on a superficial level, and they have a deeper meaning on a spiritual level. They become symbolic. The Rambam, you know, wrote a book called Moril Nevuchim, and he dedicates the entire third chelik. There are three parts to the Moril Nevuchim to understand Hebrew words in Lashon Kodesh. I don't mean modern Israeli words. I'm talking about Hebrew words from the Tanakh, and to understand how they could be interpreted on a physical level, but what it means on a more figurative, spiritual level. Like, for example, when it says Vayorach Hashem es Reach Hanichoch, and God smelled the good smell. So on one hand, Vayorach could mean, as we saw earlier, he smelled physically. But Vayorach could mean something totally different. It's something nafshi. It's something that touches on the soul itself. Here too, the word redu physically means go down. But on a spiritual level, the same word redu, which indicates a yerida, tells a person, you know what? You go down, down, down. Like, for example, by Yehuda in last week's parasha, it says, Vayered Yehuda mitoch echav. Yehuda went down. And that's when he had the relationship with Tamar. And Rashi says, Yerida, it was a spiritual Yerida. Yehuda lost his stature, his high stature, and you know the adoration of his brothers because of the Maisa of Yosef, that he didn't take more of a leadership role and prevent them from selling Yosef. So the Maharal Prague says this is what bothers Rashi. Why did Yaakov turn to his sons and say, Redu Shama? Go down to Mitzrayim. He should have said, Lechu Shama, go to Mitzrayim. They'll know which direction to go. He didn't have to say Redu. Redu sounds like there's a Yerida. And therefore, says the Maharal, based on a Medrash Rabin Shmos that interprets a Pasuk in Tehillim, Tehillim says in Kuf Yutes, Psach Tvarecha Yair, Pesach Tvarecha Yair, means use a positive language, nothing that could be negative, and it'll give light. You know, we have to be very careful about the way we speak. The Afal Gav, even though the Mizrahi is absolutely correct, the Maharal is not denying it. Misha Holeth, the Eretz Yisrael of Mitzrayim Yored, it's true that on a physical level, Eretz Yisrael is higher, and therefore going to Mitzrayim means going down to Mitzrayim. Afilu Achi Lo Havi Leila Meimarkach. Yaakov shouldn't have said that. Me'achar Shu Loshon Yerida. Aval Mashe Kosuv, and the question of the Mizrahi. Vayerdu achei Yosef, that the very next pasuk Gimel says that they went down lo kasha. Rashi had no questions on that. Ki hu lashon hakasu. Here the Torah is describing events. When the Torah records events, it uses language that is physical and is real. It's absolutely accurate. The brothers went down to Mitzrayim. But v'dafka ha-medaber, but in the case of Pasuk Yutes, which is Yaakov Avinu, and this is a direct quote from Yaakov, as he addresses his sons, lo yomar redu, he shouldn't have said the word redu, mipnei shu lashon klola el ha-meduber. It's almost like an implicit curse, so to speak, to the person when you say redu. You go down. You go all the way down, you know, down to Sheol, you know, down to the pits. So it comes out that according to the Maharal, there's a fundamental difference here between Pasuk Beis, I mistakenly said Pasuk Yutes, I meant to say Pasuk Beis, and Pasuk Gimel. Whereas in Pasuk Beis, Rashi has a question, why did Yaakov instruct his sons redu, as if to say, you go down, 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 whereas in Pasuk Gimel Vayeredu Achi Yosef, where the Torah is reporting what in fact they did, that Rashi is not bothered by. Rashi is bothered by Yaakov when it's a direct quote of Yaakov's words. And I have here a sefer called the Pshuto Shel Mikra. He makes a big deal about this maral, that we should always be sensitive to the difference between the language that the Torah uses to record events and the language of a person who's speaking in first person. And again, let's go back to our discussion about the skinny cows. At the beginning of Perek Mem Aleph, you remember, when the Torah records the dream of Paro, it doesn't say Kahena, Lohaya Kahena B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, that there was never such a thing. It's only when Paro is quoted directly, verbatim, in Pasuk Yitesh, then Paro adds the phrases Lo Ra'isi Kahena B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim L'Roa. I never saw such a thing. Our country, as we said before, is prosperous. It's agriculturally, it's the best. You know, we produce the fattest cows and the most beautiful cows you can imagine. And so Paro's a little embarrassed because he's seeing a dream in which the Paros look so impoverished. He says, we never had this before. Something is going on over here. And that's how Paro's cover-up was. So again, you see very clearly that there are two modes of language. There's the mode of language where the Torah is describing what took place, and there the Torah is absolutely meticulous without adding or subtracting. And then when a person speaks, and the Torah is recording in first person verbatim what a person said, they have to see what the additions are and the editorial comments. Rashi, in the case of Yaakov, turning to his sons, instructing them, redu, shama, go down there. Rashi says, what's going on here? Why would Yaakov use such a word? Redu. It's almost implicit of a klala. Go down, down, down. Says Rashi, oh no, there's a much deeper meaning to what Yaakov is trying to convey to his sons, either consciously or subconsciously. Redu is 210. This is the remez to the golus, to the golus in Mitzrayim. If you take a look at the maral, I think he's very consistent in the next source. The pasuk says, if we fast forward to Perek Mem Gimel, pasuk Chav, Vayomru bi Adoni yorod yoradnu b'tchilo lishbar ochel. And notice the language of the brothers when they speak in front of Yosef, and they use this double language, yorod yoradnu. And Rashi says, Yerida hi lanu. This is very embarrassing for us. This is a compromising situation for us, the brothers said. Regilim hayu lefarnes acherim. People came to us for food. We were always the source, you know, the wealthy guys in town. But achshav anu tzrichim lecha. Now we need you. And Yerod Yeradnu, Rashi is reinterpreting it. So says the Maral, Kmosh Kasafti Lamala, Kol Mokam Shenema Loshin Yerida, Bamidaber Atzmo. If the person himself uses the word Yerida, something is fishy, something is off key. We have to figure out what it means. She'ein Lamidaber Lidaber Beloshin Yerida. A person, when he speaks, should not use the word Yerida. Yerida is not a Loshin Tov, it's not a Loshin Tzach. Yerida implies going down, down, down. So why are they saying Yerod Yeradnu? The answer is, must be Bola Drush. There's got to be a Drush over here. The use of that term must be indicating something else, something more profound. And Rashi says, yeah, we're not used to this, my friend. We used to be the ones who support and maintain others. We are sustainers, not takers. And now, unfortunately, the tides have changed and the wheel has turned. The wheel of fortune has turned against us. Yerod Yeradnu. Now we have to go down to stoop to the level of taking from others. We have to put out our hands to take. Kasher hu dibur akosuv lekakpeta. Boy, the Torah is describing not the words of someone verbatim, but what transpired and recording happenings and stories. There, the word Yeradnu or Yorod or Redu, those words are absolutely appropriate, because if you're going from a high place to a low place, the Torah is going to use the word Redu or Lered. But when the Torah is quoting somebody and he, that speaker, uses the language Yerida, Ah, you know, there's something to be commented, and we need a drasha. So we have two drashas now on the word Yerida. We have Redu Shama in the case of Yaakov instructing his sons, and there he's telling them Redu 210, the beginning of Golos Mitzrayim. And now we have Yarod Yaradnu, and we have to reinterpret Al Pidrush that it means that we're going down to stoop to the lowest level, the most embarrassing situation. A status change for us from one extreme to the other, that now we're totally dependent upon you to support us and sustain us. We were impoverished. My father used to say that back in the old country where he came from, when the Rav was collecting money for Mo's Chitin in order to buy matzahs for the poor people before Pesach, he would say to each person, either you give or you take. Oder du gibst, oder du nimmst. There's no middle of the ground here. If you can't give, then you have to take. You have to receive. You're a poor person. That was the phrase they used to use.
Which country was that?
In Lithuania, you know where he came from. Now, if you take a look back in Perek Mem Beis, you remember when Yosef had already taken Shimon and incarcerated him, and now he says, "You don't come back to see me until you bring your younger brother Binyamin that you told me about." Vayomer ish el achiv, and the brothers spoke to each other. Avol ashemim anachnu, we are guilty. Al achinu, and now this is a reference to Yosef. Asher ra'inu tzaras nafsho, when we sold him as an eved, we saw that the anguish that he went through, that he experienced. Bischanu eilenu, and he supplicated, he begged us. V'lo shamanu, we didn't listen. We were totally heartless and cruel. Al kein, and therefore, ba elenu hatzara hazos. Now we have to suffer. Says the Ramban, asher ra'inu tzaras nafsho bischanano elenu chashvu lehem hachzorius. They saw how Yosef was cruel to them, now forcing them to bring their younger brother Binyamin. La'onish gadol Yosef and Mechira. This was a worse punishment than was coming to them for the Mechira. In other words, if you isolate the Mechira itself, the fact that they sold Yosef as a slave, that wouldn't have generated this severe punishment, this cruel punishment of taking Binyamin away. Ki acheim b'sorim mischanin mispal ufneim v'lo yirachamu. Why do they deserve the punishment now of Achzorius, that Yosef is so cruel to them? The answer is because they were cruel to their brother, their flesh and blood, who was begging them, and they had no compassion over him. What's that called, Rabosai? When you look at a punishment that befalls you and you see that it's exactly what you deserve. Do you remember what that's called?
In Hebrew?
Exactly. Midah kineged midah. This is why the brothers, they proclaim Avol Hashem Emanach. Do they realize, they interpret the events that take place, and they see, how could this leader of such a great civilization be so cruel to us? The answer is that we were cruel to our brother. They didn't even realize how much was midah kineged midah. It was even more than what they knew. Because this cruelty was coming from the very same brother of theirs that they were cruel to. That they didn't know. But what they did know is that they were cruel to Yosef, their brother, and they were cruel, and now Yosef is being cruel, it's boomeranging against them, enforcing them to bring Binyamin down. And so we have here a midah kineged midah. And again, there's an interesting implication here in the Ramban, that for the Mechira itself, the selling of Yosef, they didn't deserve such a cruel punishment. And if you want to see a little bit more of an embellishment, I think, of this idea of the Ramban, turn to your page 2 on the flip side, and you'll see the Sfarno, the next to the last source on your page, on this very pasuk that we're learning now, Vizchanenu Eilenu V'lo Shamanu, Hayinu Achzorim Neged Achenu. We were cruel against that brother Joseph. Even though we thought he had the status of a rodev, which means that we're allowed to get rid of him because he's threatening our lives, nevertheless, we should have had compassion when he begged and he supplicated in front of us. Keneged midas achzoriyu. So zeh, because we were cruel. Ha'ish, this man, which they didn't know how to identify him as Yosef, mit achzer negdenu, he became cruel against us. And this is the Sfarno lishitaso, as we say. You know, this reflects the Sfarno's previously, explicit opinion. Because if you turn back to Perek Lamed Zion, to Parshas Vayeshev, there it says, Vayiro somirachok, they saw Yosef approaching them from a distance. B'terem yikrav aleim vayisnaklu oso lahamiso. They schemed and planned to kill him. And the Sfarno wants to know, what does this word vayisnaklu means? And he quotes a pasuk in Bamidbar, Lashon Nechal, that's the root of the word vayisnaklu. Vayisnaklu means is an active verb, but the root of the word is nun chaf lamed yoreh al hamtza'a lehara. Nachla means when somebody, Nachal means when somebody has a plan to do evil against you. Says the Sfarno Omar, Shechashvus Yosef Beliba Nochel. Why did the brothers now plan to do evil, to bring destruction upon Yosef? Because Yosef was the Nochel. In their judgment, Yosef was the original one who would plan and scheme Lahamis to kill them. The Shabalim, when he comes towards them, Lo Lidrosh Shlomam El Limtza Aleim Alila, you know why he's coming now? He's not coming to find out how we're doing. He's coming to find another way of tripping us up, of finding fault, of bringing some guilt, story of guilt back to our father, so our father would hate us. Olachtiom kideshi yikalam avihem o ya'anshem. Hakel yisbach vishar hu levado baruch me'abonim. What they want, what Yosef is planning to do is get his father to curse them, so that he, Yosef, and exclusively Yosef, would get the brachos. It's sort of like a repeat situation of what happened with Yaakov and Esav. And now also the brothers are suspect of Yosef, that he, like Yaakov, wants to take away their brachos and put them into cherem, and that would be spiritual destruction for them. And therefore they decided that he was a rodef. Ubazeho dia mashahoya lomo bios kulam tzadikim gmurim. Ech noadu lev yachtov. These were all tzaddikim, the brother says the Sfarno. And they gathered together with one unified heart, larogas achiyam olamachro, to kill him or sell him. Why? Kitziru believer, because they came to the absolute convincing, they were convinced, vechashvus Yosef lenochel, they had pegged him, Yosef, as the nochel, the one who wanted to do evil against them, is nakesh ben nafsham la misam, who is planning and scheming to kill them, bolam azel, bolam abba, or b'shneim, maybe in this world, maybe in the next world, maybe in both worlds. Torah Omer, the Torah says in Sanhedrin, Habola Hargacha, Hashkim Lahargo, if somebody's coming to kill you, he's threatening your life, you take the initiative and put him to death. And therefore, says the Sfarno, the brothers were very consistent here. They were tzaddikim, they thought that Yosef was the nochel against them, and therefore vayisnaklu oso lamiso, they came to defend themselves with after classifying and handing down a verdict, a judgment that Yosef was a rodev. Is mevela. Now we understand, if we go back to the original pasuk we started with, that asher ra'inu b'tzaras nafsho b'schanu leinu, says the Ramban, they're not doing tshuva and clapping al chait because of the mechir itself, that they had a right to sell Yosef. That was justified according to their understanding. He was a rodef, you got to get him out of here. But why were they guilty? They should have gone a little bit lefnim mishur sadin. They should have gone beyond the letter of the law. Ra'inu b'tzaras nafsho b'schanu elinu. We saw his suffering. And instead we responded with cruelty, with callousness. We sat down, we ate a meal after throwing him into the bar, as if we couldn't care less for his feelings. Why were we so cruel? That's why we're suffering now. Mida keneged mida. Hashem has brought about the punishment in which Yosef, the leader of Mitzrayim, is getting so cruel to us. Not willing to hear our pleas that Binyamin can't be brought here. Our old father will die. But that's mida keneged mida. Just as we were cruel not to receive and break down over the supplications of our brother Yosef, now he, Yosef, not knowing that it's him, but the viceroy of the time, is reflecting cruelty against us. and forcing us to bring Binyamin down to Mitzrayim. Okay, Rabbi, so we'll stop here.